This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Dan Hallstrom. Dan is with the U.S. Meat Export Federation and is set to join us in just a few moments. Trillion-dollar farm bill about to be debated. Allison Rivera is with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Says when it comes to the money that...
You know, Chairman Thompson has a lot of thoughts in that SNAP space and has some experience with the program growing up and brings a lot of wisdom and thoughts and how we can... work on that issue. We don't have a ton of policy in the SNAP space, but we know that the SNAP portion and the farm portion have to go together. We've seen in the past that it's just difficult to separate the two and get it across the finish line. So we will figure out how to tackle that and move forward for sure.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Dan Hallstrom. Dan is President, CEO. U.S. Meat Export Federation, great to see you.
Yeah, likewise, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Okay, 2023 Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show. I'm pretty sure you can't use your two hands to figure out how many times you've been to one of these conventions. Might take more than two hands, right?
Exactly. Yeah, no, I enjoy coming to these. It's a great time to interact with beef producers, cattle producers, and we have a good story to tell this year. We're going to finish up 2022. We have 1 month of data that'll come out next week to go yet, but we're going to be a new record on both volume and value. And the exciting part of that is they're really talking about broad-based growth across quite a few different markets. So that's exciting in and of itself. And if depending where December comes in, we're going to be close to $12 billion in exports of U.S. beef.
Are we seeing any issues with, we can see them domestically, the prices. Are we running into... maybe not demand destruction, but just some hesitancy yet?
Well, I've been asking that same question of our team around the world. We have at least monthly meetings. I've been asking that same question. At what point does disposable income become affected where they're going to downgrade their protein demands, so to speak? And there's been a few cracks in the armor, but generally the answer is it's still strong. I mean, honestly, I've been in this business almost 40 years now. I don't think I've ever seen demand this good globally. Now, there's a lot of concerns out there, inflation, you've got a strong dollar in certain parts of Asia. But despite all that, it's been pretty darn good. So hopefully we can keep this momentum going.
You talk about the demand being good, but that's not something that just happens overnight with, oh, we decided to have a sell on whatever this week. What goes into getting that demand to where it is today?
Well, it's literally decades of work from a lot of individuals, a lot of organizations. It's not just about USMEF. It's about cattle producers helping to tell the story. It's about packers and exporters helping to tell the story in these markets. And we just had our 45th anniversary of our office in Tokyo, which was our first office established outside the U.S. in 1977. So it's a $2.5 billion market, but to your point, it's taken 45 years to develop into one of the most reliable markets in the world. So that's the goal. The goal is how many more Tokyos can we get set up for U.S. beef? And Korea is going to be $2.7 billion this year. China is going to be over $2 billion. So this is the momentum we have to keep going.
I've talked to some who've gone to China in the past 10 years, and really we've seen that market starting to mature from the maybe lower cuts, starting to buy up a little bit. Is that starting to mature as a market?
It is, and it's all in the last two or three years. And, China, you know, and this is really true of all of Asia. China, Japan, and Korea were setting records, but it's with the food service being hamstrung. You know, food service hasn't existed as we know it in China for 2.5 years. And they had zero COVID lockdown, or policy, I should say, and a resulting lockdown all the way through November of last year. So you really had no food service business. So it's retail and online that's carrying the water. The reason that's exciting is they've lifted the zero COVID policy in China now. Now, it's a bit of a really bad situation with a lot of healthcare system is stretched in China, but they'll come through it. And when they do, and when things normalize, what'll happen? There's going to be revenge spending at food service. People are going to want to go out. My only question is that in April? Is it in July? I don't know. But at some point, food service will rebound, and that's more demand for U.S. beef.
Let's talk about some other markets. Obviously, as a market matures, you're going to reach some kind of a plateau there. So how important is it to work on some emerging markets?
Extremely important. And that in fact, Tony, is the strategy to diversify to as many different markets as we can. Not being overly reliant upon any one or two markets. And a lot of people say, well, China is risky. And it is. You know, you can ask the Australians. They had many plants delisted last year, and there's all sorts of political things going on. So that's the reason we've got to have more markets. And I'll give you some examples. Colombia, we've seen 500% growth in the last 5 years from a low base, but nevertheless, very fast growth. Peru, huge for beef variety meats. You can take several markets in Africa, Morocco, South Africa, Angola, Nigeria. It's mainly a variety meat market today, but guess what? They're starting to look at muscle cuts. So this is how markets start. And it does. The nice thing about it is we don't have to invest millions of dollars in these markets. You can invest nominal amounts of money and get your toe in the water and get some exposure and brand awareness. And that usually it pays off over time. And we're starting to see that now.
You talk about paying off. Does this pay off back at the producer level at maybe a per head?
Yeah, well, no doubt. That's the goal, right? And we're at $452 a head through 11 months in 2022, and that's without the hides and the rendered products. If you add that in, it's $500 a head back to the producer and for every head slaughtered. So this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to maximize that return, and we're doing that by focusing on a broader group of markets.
So if we're maximizing the return, does it help when we get partners to contribute? Now I'm teeing this one up. MAP and FMD funding through USDA.
Well, yeah. Well, I'll describe. Maybe I'll start with our funding structure. Our two largest funding sources are Checkoff, beef, and pork, and USDA. And what's the reason we get USDA? It's because of the industry investment. That is the number one criteria that goes into qualifying for USDA funding. And so our beef partners, the National Checkoff, the state councils that invest in USMEF, were able to take those dollars and leverage it with USDA dollars. So if you're investing, let's just use a round number of $1 million to USMEF, you can rest assured you're getting at least $1 million in government funding that goes with that. And that's the sort of the formula to the success.
So as we are now in 2023 and looking at the rest of this year into the next couple of years, what do you see coming down the pipe?
Well, we're obviously going to have lower beef supplies production because of the drought the last couple of years. But that being said, we're shifting gears a little bit. We always are focused on carcass utilization anyway, because we're selling a lot of variety meats, we're selling a lot of cuts that maybe aren't so popular in the U.S. Well, we've just ramped that up, knowing that if production's down X percent, that means X percent less short plates, X percent less short ribs for Asia. So we're looking at rounds. Rounds are very underutilized primal. We have our folks around the world, Taiwan, Korea, Mexico, looking more and more at rounds. You're looking at knuckles and insides, doing more with less, so to speak. So this will be sort of the theme for the next year anyway, or maybe longer, because we're not just going to focus on selling stuff that we don't have enough of. And this is already we're seeing some results in this area. So this will be one of our things for 2023.
And the final one with about a minute left. What do producers need to know? Producers that maybe are not active in their national or state organizations, what do they need to know about USMEF?
Well, we're here to tell the producer's story, and we don't do a very good job in general. We can do a much better job of telling how much the producers care, how safe our product is. We have the global reputation as the premier safe product. You can't say that about a lot of our competitors around the world. So we have a safe product, and of course, the obvious thing is a very tasty, you know, rich product from grain feeding. And telling that story is really the key. So that's what we do each and every day. We're educating these consumers and the trade in all these markets. And quite frankly, not... I probably shouldn't say this, but it's really a fairly easy job because the great product that our producers put out, we're just out there telling a story.
So good to see you. If we want to keep up with USMEF, can we do that online?
Sure can, yep, www.usmef.org.
So good to see you. Have a great year.
Thank you, Tony.
Dan Hallstrom is President and CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation from the 2023 Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show. I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.
There's a tradition down here in the South, a tradition of hard work, a tradition of straight talk. For more than 100 years, Delta Pine Cotton has been a proud part of that tradition. With proven yield potential and genetics you won't find anywhere else, Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with Strong Cotton from Delta Pine Brand. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Marcia Bunger is the administrator of USDA's Risk Management Agency on standing up new tools.
Currently, how RMA stands up all of its different crop policies, I call it a three-pronged approach. We look to the Hill. We look to you to have us stand up those policies. That you write. We also look to the 508H process where private submitters submit, and they also involve then recommendations, support from growers, much like the corn growers did with PACE. And then the third is within the department itself, within what guidelines that RMA has to stand up programs. All of those come with reviewers and actuarial soundness that needs to be maintained. So it's a balance. With the 508H process, they are supported by reviewers and also AIPs that recommend how marketable the products are. So we will continue to work through those and take a look at those. The policies that are available have increased exponentially. You know, in 2000, I believe RMA had 300 policies, and now today we are at 600 policies. The billions of dollars of liability that are covered under those policies have grown also dramatically. You know, the dollar amount that comes to my mind back in 2000 was $30 billion. Today we are at over $200 billion worth of liability, and that's every year. So we are seeing a great deal of interest in all of the policies that we stand up. But at the end of the day, we listen to the farmer. We listen to the stakeholders and what their needs are, and that's what we will continue to do.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
At Ag Texas Farm Credit, your success is our only purpose. We understand your financing needs and will be here to support you through it all. We specialize in traditional farming and ranching operations, recreational property, equipment and livestock, agribusiness, and country home loans, plus insurance and leasing. At Ag Texas, we're dedicated to the prosperity of agriculture and rural America. Ag Texas Farm Credit, your success, our purpose.
The best thing you can put on your crop is your shadow. Your need to be in the field won't change, and the Cotton Research and Promotion Program was put into place to make sure you get the most from every minute you're out there. That's why the Cotton Board and Cotton Incorporated work alongside growers to spur innovation, fund research, and foster sustainability so generations of farming families can walk the same turn rows for years to come. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton. It's the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Dan Hallstrom, CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Are you looking for a new opportunity? The King Ranch Institute for Ranch Management's Ranch Manager Job Board is open. With jobs posted from Texas, Idaho, New Mexico, Nebraska, Colorado, New York, Montana, Oklahoma, South Dakota, Oregon, Florida, even Mexico. Or are you looking for someone to manage a ranch? Find out more at the King Ranch Institute for Ranch Management online, KRIRM.com. It's the Agribusiness Report.
USDA's soybean world production forecast for February showed a similar pattern as corn, a total downward adjustment in production due to a month-over-month reduction in what is expected to come from Argentina.
Given the drought conditions, we reduced our production forecast for Argentina 4.5 million tons. So currently it is forecast at 41 million tons. That would be down 2.9 million from last year.
World Agriculture Outlook Board Chair Mark Jankowski said the lower production led to tighter supplies on the global balance sheet.
Global soybean trade, we're looking at lower exports out of Argentina, but almost nearly offset by higher exports from Paraguay and Brazil.
Minor adjustments to the U.S. balance sheet contributed to a season-ending average price adjustment up of one dime to $14.30 a bushel. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.